Hello, I'm Mariette Sneyman, a journalist devoted to uncovering new ways to understand ourselves, deepen our relationships, and strengthen our emotional well-being. Thank you for joining us on Calm, Clear, and Helpful, the weekly podcast series, which introduces you to wellness professionals offering their expertise and assistance. Today's topic is A Mum Speaks, Child-Led Parenting, ADHD, and Healthy Choices. If you're raising a child who isn't neurotypical, or if you're curious about child-led parenting, I'm sure you'll find this episode illuminating. The wellness professional I'm introducing is Benita Kondi, advertising industry expert, coach, consultant, and founder at Create Radical Love, speaking from Richmond in Virginia. Welcome back on the show, Benita.
Thank you, Mariette. It's wonderful to be back.
For the listeners who haven't heard our episode on intuition, which I'll include in the podcast notes, could you say more about the work you do?
Yeah, absolutely. My first career was that of a classical ballet dancer, living in New York City at a very young age. I then, through a winding path, found my way into the advertising industry, which you mentioned. And after almost two decades in that industry, in roles supporting often the creative people and the creative talents in that industry, I then, 9 years ago now, which is amazing, I left the full-time world in that industry and founded my own coaching and consulting business called Create Radical Love. And the premise behind that was and is developing and cultivating a more unconditional sense of love for oneself first, because we must do that first before we can then have an understanding of how to meet others in a more open, loving space, I would say. I think it's important in the work environment that there are boundaries, and certainly it's a conditional relationship, but that it comes from a place of really understanding oneself through the lens of compassion and, I would say, a good dose of like healthy acceptance about what we can and we can't control, and boundaries, and really understanding ourselves, our intuition, which we talked about last time, which can lead to more clarity around our values, what we really prefer, and then how we can show up with integrity in, you know, our personal relationships. But most people come to me to help support them through professional transitions. And so that is where the name of the business comes from, is this idea of building and designing and creating and living more radically loved lives rather than tolerated, compartmentalized, getting by, semi-burned out lives, which the way in which we interact with the world today in terms of media, in terms of technology, all of those things leave us open to a pace and a sense of like messaging, conditioning, and expectations that is not regenerative, that is not sustainable, unless I find, in my own life and working with clients, that we really understand our preferences, our priorities, what matters most to us, so that we can prioritize them from a sense of alignment. So I use that word alignment a lot, like what is truly aligned for me versus all of the shoulds in the world that everybody else is communicating about, maybe trying to sell things around, wanting to raise awareness around, likely because there's a business component attached to it, a capitalist component attached to it here in the US. So I've been very fortunate now for eight and a half years to have this really beautiful, solid, wonderful business that supports my life with my family, where I choose to not work full time. I choose to work hours that feel really, again, regenerative, like they fill me. I love working with my clients. I coach both individuals and businesses, leadership teams and businesses, or individual employees inside businesses, to approach life from this holistic place. Like, who am I? How am I approaching my life and my work? And then how does that inform how I show up in, let's say, an existing role or seeking a new role or starting one's own business, etc.
Yes, and I immediately thought that this dovetails with, as you mentioned our personal lives. This dovetails with how we live our personal lives. And that is what I would like to talk to you about, especially about parenting. Because we've had a pre-talk and you mentioned so many interesting things and I extracted themes from that. But firstly, would you mind telling us about your family?
Yes, I would love to. I adore them. I think as for context, I was raised in Minnesota in the United States, in the suburb of Minneapolis. And I was a ballet dancer, as I mentioned. And so I moved to New York City at 17, just turning 18, to pursue that career and training full time. And it gave me such a powerful, diverse worldview. I think New York City will ultimately be like my heart home. I just so love the range of experiences you have in a city like New York City, where so many different people in all ways are living together, quite honestly, relatively peacefully. Like, it's wild, actually, when you like look around and you're like, this whole thing works. So I just wanted to start there, because I did meet my now husband there in New York City after I quit dancing. I shifted into the fitness industry for a period of time before I found my way into advertising. And he has worked for 3 decades in the fitness industry. And we met as personal trainers. And so we're actually just about to celebrate our 20th wedding anniversary. And we met 30 years ago. So we have a long, long time together of growing and learning and growing up together and changing and needing outside help and support from time to time in our marriage. And so after we were together 10 years, we got married. And then 2 years later, 2.5, almost 3 years later, we had our son. So he is 16 and is one of my greatest teachers. I think our children absolutely can be our greatest teachers if we are open to that and aware that we learn so much from them. And we have lots of family. We now live in Richmond, Virginia, which is a part of the story, which we can talk about. We moved from New York City to Richmond 8 years ago as part of this journey of realizing how much more freedom was available in our lives, especially once I left a full-time industry. You know, the advertising industry is obviously incredibly baked into New York City business life. So we made the move here. And it's been a really, deep and wonderful journey being my son's mother. My husband just asked me that because we celebrated Mother's Day here this past weekend in the US. And he said, how is mothering for you? It's such a lovely question. We were at breakfast, just my husband and I, after going to have some sauna and cold plunge time at a local farm here. And such a lovely question. I said, you know, I'm really loving this phase. Like, I love who my son is becoming as this like young adult-ish, you know, moving more and more into who he is as a young man. And I'm really, really enjoying it. So that's sort of the overview.
Yeah. Shall we start with a chronological overview of your son's early years and then your move? Because there were some very interesting things that shifted when you moved from New York City to Richmond, especially for your son.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, and I do also want to mention here, which I did in our previous conversation, is that I'm also sober. And I will be celebrating 19 years of sobriety. So I got sober when my husband and I were married for 1 year. And that has been a huge component in my choice and like the timing around becoming a parent. So that's a key component to all of this as well. I'd always, always, always wanted to be a mother from very, very little. You know, I was certainly not true for everyone by any means, but I was definitely a little girl who was very attracted to babies and holding babies and being around young children and working in the nursery at church and babysitting at a very young age and being a nanny for a family in our neighborhood many summers. And I just was like, that was a deep calling of mine from very, very young. And I realized the way in which I was living my life in my late 20s, early 30s, didn't feel conducive to motherhood, both in terms of like physical health and mental, emotional health and stability, and just feeling like I cannot be using alcohol and drugs in the way that I am and be a parent. Like, these two things don't go together. And my parents are not big drinkers at all. They hardly drink. And, you know, so I saw that as a model of parenting, which I'm really grateful for, and was able to see the contrast in my life and say, don't think I'm going to be able to be present in the way I want to be if I continue down this path. So that was a huge factor in me getting sober. We had been married a year. I wanted to try to start to have children, and they didn't mesh. I was like, the way I'm living my life doesn't seem like that would happen in a really healthy way. And so that was a huge motivating factor in me getting sober. So I just want to say that my son is absolutely a gift of my sobriety and my recovery. And he came into the world and, you know, early, like little infant time, I thought I'd love, and I didn't. So I like to be really honest about that. Because I think it is very romanticized, especially in like the Instagram world. And I found it really hard for multiple reasons. But we moved through that phase and moved into toddler time. And in New York City, as one can imagine, it's super intense to find your child, like early childhood experiences, schooling, daycare. You know, there's just a lot of people competing for these, you know, slots and seats and services and things like that. So we started him in an initial preschool at 2.5, and he just, things that he exhibited there, we had never saw at home, which is that it was very overwhelming for him. Like, he really just wanted to be off on his own. So the teachers there made us aware of that. And we luckily had a wonderful special education teacher for early childhood who was our friend and our neighbor who lived upstairs from us. So we asked her to, you know, evaluate and make some observations. And she was like, yeah, I don't think this is the right place for him. So we found him a more appropriate setting that allowed him to be more, it was too structured, and he needs a lot of freedom. He very much knows what he prefers. He beats to his own drum. And that was a huge education at 2 and 3. Like, from 2 to 4 years old is where we really learned a lot about who he was in structured environments, where there's like a lot of expectation to behave in certain ways, conform quickly, be able to self-regulate, which is wild to me that we're expecting 2 to 4 year olds to do this in the world.
Yeah.
But okay. Like, it really, I was like, oh, wow. And I was a very, very self-regulated, structured, perfectionistic child. So I could do that naturally, but I could see that that was not in his nature. So it was very interesting to be like, oh, okay, wow, these are really the first big lessons in my child is not me. And I need to be able to do the work to metabolize that and any visions I thought I had from my own experience, because that's what we have to work with in the beginning, would not be helpful to project onto this child. Like, he is his own entity. Wow. Like, from birth. Okay. Like, nature versus nurture. I was like, okay, he's really who he is. So we had some evaluations happen early on, because he really was, you know, like, hey, these environments where there's lots of kids and there's lots going on, like, nah, not for me. He was making that pretty clear. And so over time, we were able to find a private school in New York City that worked for him in first and second grade. And it was 6 kids in a class. Like, that's what worked for him. And he has an ADHD diagnosis. And that came, some things that come along with that diagnosis, though, that can be on sort of a broader spectrum, are things like some sensory sensitivities and some social and emotional, they would call them delays. I just think of it as like he processes a bit differently, came to some things about how he interacts with others. Just, it took a little bit more time. And again, when you're expected to behave a certain way in certain structured settings based on of course, safety and security of everyone around, but you're also asking that of a toddler. Same thing. I'm like, man, it's wild what we're expecting of kids to kind of like all know at the same time together. So that's when we realized more like traditional larger classroom environments, absolutely not for him. Found this school. It worked for a couple years. And that was during the time when I was considering leaving full time. I started my business. And that school was incredibly expensive, and we had to sue the Department of Education, which is part of the process there, if the schools that they offer and have available within the New York City Department of Education are not appropriate environments for your student. If you find a private school environment that is the most appropriate environment for your students, then you have to hire a lawyer and sue the Department of Education so that they'll reimburse you and pay.
Goodness.
Because every student. Yeah. Every child in New York City is, offered a free and fair education, but you have to move through these steps if like your zoned school or the public schools are not the most appropriate environment for your student. So that was, those were very intense years finding this, you know, most aligned, most nourishing places for our kiddo. So it didn't feel, you know, when they're so little and you realize these environments are not working for them and they're having really hard days at such a young age, it's just like, no, no, thank you. We're going to find the right place. And we luckily did. But again, it was expensive and challenging. And, you know, you were like sort of always working within this very intense bureaucracy to make that happen. And so when I started my own business and we all realized, oh, wait, it doesn't mean then we maybe, I had this belief when I worked in the advertising industry that I had to be in New York City because it's sort of the center of that industry. And that was a limiting belief. Like, that's not true. And when I started to work with clients all over the world, I was working virtually before, like, I guess it was sort of the advent of digital nomadism, but it was years before the pandemic. So I was like, wow, I can do this from anywhere. I just need my laptop. So that gave us so much freedom. So that's when we explored moving to Richmond, Virginia. We have multiple family members in Virginia. At that point, we had one in Richmond, but my mother-in-law was also planning to move to Richmond. And I was very connected to the advertising industry here. Before we moved, I already had 3 clients booked here. There's a wonderful, like globally regarded large advertising agency here. There's a wonderful college-based program, master's degree program for like a master's degree portfolio in the advertising industry program here at VCU. And then again, I had multiple other contacts and connections here. So that felt great professionally. My husband is a personal trainer still. So he was able to reform his business here with lots of contacts he had because he went to college at VCU. So it just felt like a really connected shift for us. And in doing that, as it relates to our son, we started to research school options, obviously, high priority for us. And it turned out we visited multiple schools that were like smaller environments and, you know, worked with kids who beat to their own drum. And then we found out that at that point, and this was years ago now, 8 years ago, that Virginia was one of the states that had free online public school. You could go to virtual school where they had administrators, teachers, a full curriculum, all the books, textbooks, materials was shipped to you for free. And you act then as a learning coach for your child at home. So you help them navigate the day and make sure they're online for their classes and they're getting their work done. But you do have teachers that you work with as well. And that felt really good to me. I was not interested in traditional homeschooling, like crafting a curriculum and doing all of that research and planning. That was not exciting to me. And in the work that I had done as a coach, I really knew how to honor that for myself. Like, what parts of this are exciting, feel aligned, can't wait to engage, and what parts am I like, no, thank you. And where would I like help and support and a system and structure to maybe be part of the process? And so this felt very exciting for us. And we knew that meant that our kiddo, besides his scheduled classes where he needed to be online, you know, on camera and a teacher seeing him and doing work with others, he could have so much flexibility throughout his day. He could take breaks when he needed. He could lay on the floor and roll around and eat a rice cake while we're doing spelling. Like, whatever he needed to do, to move through the academic work, which would help him focus and concentrate, rather than sort of forcing concentration. For a kiddo with ADHD, where moving his body physically at certain times can then help create more focus, but that might not work within a school schedule. We could offer that freedom. So it was so much more about, like, let's get him into a really open environment physically at home where he has lots of flexibility and see what happens with his academics. Because he's a really bright kiddo, and that helped massively. Like, he caught up. He was like, I forget, at least a year behind in math. And within a year, he had totally caught up. And we were like, okay, this is so much more about environment. He conceptually can engage with all of this work. He just needs a lot of freedom in how he does it. And that virtual school really allowed that for us. So he attended that virtual school for 6 years. And something that exists here in the United States, if you have a child with any kind of special need, a learning difference of some kind, or, you know, physical difference, is they have something called an IEP, an individualized education plan, and it's administered by the state. So it's state by state, and it's a legal document that is based on your child's diagnosis. So all of these things require, you know, evaluations and paperwork and doctors and pediatricians and neuropsychologists and all of these folks involved to say, like, yes, this is how we identify and label this child. I don't believe in those labels. I just chosen to use the system to help support my child. So we talk about a lot about that with him. Like, this is a way to understand your neurology and how your brain works. It is not who you are. And it's a way in which we can utilize systems and supports that exist in these systems and structures so that you can be understood and move through these systems with more ease, but it is not who you are. And oftentimes it's a massive superpower. I mean, I'd say 50% of my clients, I would identify with some sort of neuro spectrum-y, you know, experience. And I think many of us have certain nuances of this, and that's by no means to diminish those who have, you know, official diagnoses, but just from a place of love, care, compassion, acceptance, again, all the things that are so important to me as a human, but also in the work that I do professionally, is being humbly honest about the fact that, like, all of us need certain supports. All of us need things to operate in a way that is aligned for us. And so that's how we have framed everything for our son this whole time, is like, let's just find the spaces and places that are really aligned for you. No one place is right for everyone. It's just not. We're so conditioned to believe we're supposed to change to make ourselves aligned to whether it's a corporation or a particular industry or a career path. And I just, the more and more I do this work and more I learn from my son, I really see it takes work to know ourselves and to find the spaces and places that are most aligned for us and be okay with that.
Yes, I really appreciate what you're saying about labels, but they really can be useful. For instance, I like to mention ADHD in this episode, because then that can be a key word for someone who has a child who is, as you say, who might not be quite neurotypical, and they can listen to your experience and relate to that. But also very important to tell anyone of any age that they are not equal to a specific label.
Yes. Yeah, I love that distinction. Absolutely.
And Benita, when during our pre-talk, you talked about knowing your child and listening to your child as the whole human.
Yeah.
What did you mean by that?
Well, it's a great, actually, segue in the conversation to where my son is right now, which he is now in brick and mortar high school. And at a wonderful high school that just happens to be near our home, which again, just feels like, wow, it's amazing how when you allow yourself freedom to explore things outside of conditioned constructs or fears and shoulds of others, like where we chose to initially rent our home, which then we were given the option to buy our home. And it's this magical home very close to downtown Richmond, which we love being close to a city because We lived in a city for the majority of our young adult lives. It's a diverse neighborhood. That was really important to us. And then when our son was ready to go into a school environment and not do school from home anymore, computer science-based high school that's incredibly small. He's in breakout instruction groups of six kids each often. We were like, wait, what? His class, his total graduating class, I think is 90 students, which is just wild in this day and age. And it's a public school, but it's like a regional specialty school. And it's 7 minutes from our house. And like, just that these things feel like they fall into place more when you're moving through life from a more open perspective versus of like, I have a plan and this is the way it needs to happen. I find that approach, which I tried to employ earlier in my life, created a lot of anxiety, a lot of suffering, a lot of fear, sadness, again, like trying to control the uncontrollable. And the reason I raise this in terms of your question is he really was comfortable doing school from home for quite a while. And then we got to a point, and I've learned this with him all along the way, whether it's like the potty training milestone or which school is best for him milestone. Like, oh, best laid plans and all that. Like I have my ideas. And whenever I have found that I have my idea about when he should, which I'm always careful with that word, be achieving the next milestone or moving through the next developmental stage, I start to feel like anxiety, right? There's expectation. Like, oh, I'm expecting him to be at a certain place by a certain time. Oh, the world is expecting that, or the system and structure is expecting that. And he has taught me over and over and over, when I start to feel that, let go. Hands off. This is not my plan. It doesn't mean I'm not there to guide him. It doesn't mean that there aren't boundaries and there aren't expectations from a, this is how we show up and are kind, engaged citizens in society with others. There's all of that, but within the like, well, what do you really prefer? What would feel best for you? He was involved in performing arts and theater and acting for a period of time. And then a moment came when he was like, I'm really not interested in this anymore. And that broke my heart after being, you know, a ballet dancer and loving the performing arts and all that gave me. But that's not my choice. That's his desire. That would be, you know, to guilt him in through that or push him further. Now, I will say there are moments when I know he's right on the precipice of something and it's more fear-based versus like afraid of something unknown or that he is really capable of it, but he's feeling uncertain. There are those moments when I massively encourage him and will ask him to like take the chance and try something new and see first, maybe before deciding to withdraw or not participate or whatever it might be. So there's nuances in all of this. But I've really come to find we work our best as a family unit with him not feeling harmed, which I think is so important. We do not need to harm one another to motivate each other. We do not.
Yeah, those are profound words because, you know, identifying and defining what harming means can get you can go into it in finer details as you go along and eventually realize that even a tone of voice can feel to someone as if it's meant to harm them.
Yep. And you're right. It's different for each person, right? Intent versus like the actual experience somebody is having, you know, on your delivery or how you're communicating something, right? And we can't control all of those things either. So it's an interesting dance just between being willing to make mistakes, being willing to show up. But I really do find if that underlying principle is, I don't want to do any harm here. I would like to help you. I would like to guide you. I will let you know when I feel a boundary has been crossed and that likely wouldn't serve you well in life. We'll talk about that. But for instance, timeouts when my son was a toddler, no, they did not work. They had the exact opposite effect. It created almost even more resistance against whatever was trying to be taught in that moment about consequences or boundaries. And so we really had to find our way through more of a reward system for the positive behavior and conversations and quiet nervous system regulation for the moments when he was dysregulated. Like, it was such a learning experience. Like, the things I had been taught about boundary setting and consequences and timeouts and parenting and those things, like, okay, that the traditional ways that I thought I knew do not work with this particular individual. Okay, interesting. Need to learn there. Then yeah, learning about, ooh, when he's coming up against a milestone, that whether it was like potty training to go to a particular preschool, he did it the minute I stopped pushing it. Like, it was just like, just he is a being who is very sensitive to when others have expectations of him that are like for their own, that have their own fears attached. It's fascinating to watch him with different teachers and things, because that's definitely if the teacher gives him some flexibility and some trust, but also guidance, that, and so that to him, I think, feels like more caring and like there's more trust and love, rather than like, this is the way it is. And if you don't do it this way, I'm going to be super stressed about it. And you're going to feel that for me. That does not motivate him at all. If anything, he will just be like, no, thanks. Not participating in that. So he's really clear on like, also, I mean, he's taught me so much about motivating from compassion, motivating from a gentle conversation, motivating from understanding what's going on rather than like forcing. So he came to me in eighth grade. Yeah. And said, I want to go to high school, like in an actual high school. And it was perfect timing. We had done school from home for 6 years. My husband and I were both pretty tired from being teachers and parents. In a teenage relationship, it felt like it would be a really healthy time for those roles to shift away and us no longer also be his teachers as well as his parents. It was much easier for him to refuse to do things as he was individuating and coming into his own. So finding ways to motivate him as his parent around schoolwork was becoming trickier. And we're also big proponents of outside supports, as I said. So we've all experienced therapy individually. My husband and I have experienced it as a couple. Our son has experienced different forms of therapy throughout his life. So like, he even knows to ask. He'll be like, you know, I'm kind of going through a weird period. Can I go back and see my therapist and talk about some of these things? I'm like, yes. Like, the fact that you know how to do that as a teenager is just huge to me, that you feel comfortable, A, to recognize something's feeling not right. You need some help and some tools. And like, somebody else would be better than mom and dad for that. So he asked to go to brick and mortar, and we applied to some schools, and he again got into this wonderful school that he's in now. And that again is, to me, an example. Now, I know there's been lots of books written, and there's like actual, I would say, like sort of theory or structure around like child-led. My using of that term is really just to say I have found much more ease in my relationship with my child. I find I do less harm when I trust him and I trust his timing around things and follow his lead from a place of like, oh, this is what he's expressing an interest in now. Okay, let's go. He's very interested in photography right now. So, okay, let's focus on that. Let's get a camera. Let's have him work with some photographers in the community so he can see what it's like to be a photographer, have a business. So very experientially led as well, because that learning style works for him, but really about following his lead in terms of either interest or when he's wrapped up with something.
A quick note on what I do. In my 30 years as a journalist, I've seen how often people seeking health and wellness support feel unsure where to turn for providers who truly resonate with them. Through my articles and podcasts, I aim to offer reliable information while introducing audiences to trusted practitioners and resources. My platform, marietsneeman.co.za, brings together insights from more than 160 experts on physical and mental health, relationships, and parenting. You're welcome to use the search function or browse the site for relevant information. In fact, you can stream or download any podcast right there on my website, or listen to Calm, Clear and Helpful on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and other platforms. If you're a wellness provider keen on expanding your reach and credibility, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. I offer a clearly structured process and journalistic insight to help you connect deeply with your audience. If you happen to be a first-time podcast guest, you'll feel prepared before we press record. You'll find more information under Services on my website, or simply send an email to mariette@mariettesneyman.co.za. Thank you for listening to this episode. Now, let's get back to my guest. Yes, I find that fascinating and also so sensible. Of course, it requires, as I've said earlier, that you listen to your child as the whole human. So I suppose it requires a lot of focus. But it seems to me that if one is willing to put in that energy, it really leads to a win-win situation in so many ways.
Absolutely. And it's an interesting type of energy. I have found it's more of like a pause energy and I am the adult here. So I've had many more years of learning how to regulate my nervous system. I am responsible for that. I see that I am getting impatient about something, or I have an expectation, or in my mind, I thought, you know, X, Y, Z was going to happen and it hasn't, or disappointment, whatever that might be. Like, wait a minute, whose is this? Is this his or is this mine? Oh, my part in this is that I have had an expectation and he has his own life and his own timeline. And like, yes, our children are understandably a reflection of who we are to a degree, but I've worked really, really hard to undo some of that projecting that I think, you know, I'm very solidly a Gen Xer and my parents very solidly boomers. And there was more of a like, what do people see from the outside that validates the whole family unit and all of that kind of pressure. And I just really want to dial that back as much as possible. Of course, some of that always exists. We're in a family unit together, how we behave in the world and choices we make obviously, you know, impact each other, but really like take that pressure off for him and let him grow and develop, knowing that there's trust. Again, I think it really comes down to like, do I communicate to my child that in the way that they do it, and it might be very different than the way I did it, I trust them and their way to do it? Because I find when we worry a lot about our children, and I say this a lot too, my own mother, to other folks, as I've been learning more and more about this and, you know, engaging with my son in the ways that I do, like worry does not equal love. Worry communicates, I don't trust the situation. I maybe am concerned about you. And so I don't trust that you're going to be okay in the end. And that is a big, powerful message for young people to carry, right? I've got to keep proving to my parents that I'm okay and they can trust me. And doesn't mean that there aren't things to be concerned about, but how we project that energy onto our children, I think, is something to be really aware of. And my sobriety is a thread throughout all of this. Like, without being very clear, very sober, having lots of tools, lots of community, I pray and I meditate and I am physically active and I have lots of people to talk to and lots of support, I can go to all those spaces and places to process what I'm feeling about him. I don't have to project it onto him.
Yes. I wish I had heard that 30 years ago, you know. It would really have benefited quite a few people in my life, and me most of all.
Yeah.
Benita, let's talk about beneficial choices. I remember during our pre-talk, you talked about helping your child create a life they enjoy living. Mm-hmm. How does one do that best?
Oof. Well, still a work in progress here. I think it comes down to some of the things we've already talked about, but definitely those examples I've given about those like choice-making moments, and especially for folks with ADHD, and again, I'm not a neurologist or, you know, a psychiatrist studying this, but from what I've learned in my experience and what I've read and understand about some of the functions of the brain for those who do have that diagnosis or understanding of themselves, is there's a very different relationship to dopamine, and the reward centers of the brain work differently. So for me, I have a direct connection in my brain to accomplishing and a dopamine hit. Like I literally feel a sense of like, whoo, I did that thing and that feels good. And so making choices based on that type of motivating or motivation dynamic works for like a checklist, for instance, though I have recovered from being a massive list maker. I don't have as many as I used to have because that became like an artificial process of feeling worthy and feeling enough for me. But for my son, it's less about accomplishing certain tasks that doesn't have that sense of reward for him. It's longer term goals I've come to find. So we would do like a longer term reward system with him to help him stay connected to choices he was making. So it came from an intrinsic motivation, which I really did come to realize that part I think is more deeply shared in most humans, which is we feel much more fulfilled and engaged and productive and want to do whatever the thing is when there's like a true intrinsic motivation, a connection, whether it's something that's more purposeful to us for some reason or aligned with our values. And he really taught me that in spades. Like, well, let's honor this rather than fight against it with a whole bunch of like, well, you should do this because everybody does it this way. I mean, I think it's helpful that I've lived a pretty, my son and I were just talking about this. Like both my husband and I have really carved out our own lives for ourselves. Like I call it responsible rebellion. Like we live very, you know, good citizen, safe parent lives, but we do really push against systems and structures in terms of like, well, this is what everybody else is doing, so we should do that too. We've carved out our own lives, our own businesses, how we live, how our child ended up schooling, very much pushing against like societal pressures. And so I said to my son yesterday morning on our drive to school, I said, I trust you are going to be okay. Because he's not totally clear what he wants to do after high school yet. And I said, you will find that and you will know in time. And you've always, you know, moved on to the next milestone in the time that you do. We will move through all these things and you have our support. And it's like, okay, then he can make choices and decisions based on his true preferences, desires, what feels, you know, most aligned for him. And if he needs to make a change, he can make a change. And that's not the end of the world either. Like all of that stuff was so fraught with anxiety for me until my early 30s, this like sort of binary, you know, this way or that way, or if you do this, you succeed. Mm-hmm. If you don't do this, then you don't succeed. Just the majority of that stuff is just not true. It's different for each one of us. There are certain behaviors, of course, that lead to more successful, productive lives and, you know, healthy socialized behaviors and all of those types of things. But within that spectrum, there's a lot of choice and option. And I find that there's a lot of messaging that tells us it might be otherwise. It's just not true.
Yeah, and I so like the fact that you've now brought us around from parenting, that principle really applies to parenting, but it also applies to your work and the way you guide others. And would you like to tell listeners where they can learn more about your work and follow you?
Yeah, absolutely. The easiest place and most centralized place to find me is through my website, which is createradicallove.com. There's a contact page on there. And I'm also on LinkedIn and Instagram at Bedita Condi.
Thank you. I'll put all that info in the podcast notes and I'll attach the link to your website to the podcast. And now, may I ask you a fun question?
Yes.
Okay. Bonita, if you were a shoe, what would you look like and whom would you belong to?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's such an interesting question. Always, Mariette. I love your questions. A shoe. I would be a really comfortable shoe. I was a very high-heeled shoe wearer for many years, like high-heeled boots and high-heeled shoes running around advertising agencies. And once I had my son, I no longer wore high heels after that, at least to like go to work, certainly for maybe functions where I felt that that would feel really good to dress up and be a preference. So really it's about like comfortable, grounded. I think I would be like an Archie slide, like just something very supportive of your foot, comfortable, a nice line, still fashionable, but doing no harm. Shoes that do no harm. That would be my kind of shoe. And who would this shoe belong to? Is that the other part of the question?
Yes.
Just, I don't know, any woman who wants to be safe and held and comfortable.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. I don't think we can conclude with anything, with a phrase that would be more fitting, safe and comfortable and held. So thank you for sharing your journey and explaining what you have learned. And I also think that safe and comfortable and held relates to your business, Create Radical Love. So thank you for bringing everything together in that way.
Oh, it's been wonderful. I so enjoy our conversation. Thank you, Mariette.
And to our listeners, thank you for spending time with us. If this episode sparked ideas for personal growth, especially for other parents, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for free podcasts and articles on physical and mental health, romantic relationships, parenting, and navigating life's transitions. To follow me on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The weekly podcast series Calm, Clear, and Helpful is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other platforms. It's hosted and produced by me, with original music by Mart-Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.